Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by John Schulman, former head coach of UT Chattanooga, president and founder of 720 Sports Group, and I am so excited to have him on the podcast. And for this episode, you will be able to tell in the first 30 seconds that this guy is wired to coach. He was born to do it. He's got great passion and energy, and we really have a great conversation. We talk about his career, some pointers, some things that he thought were really useful to him and that separates good from great. And we talk about what they're doing up at 720 Sports Group and the coaching box event, which is going to be a no-brainer for anybody looking to get into the profession or who's in the profession looking to sharpen their craft. And we'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the podcast. But for more information on that, go to 720sportsgroup.com. And we appreciate you listening, and we hope you enjoy. Coach Schulman, how are you today?
I'm great. You ready to roll?
I'm ready. I appreciate you being on the podcast.
We're excited.
I know you're a busy guy. You got a golf tournament right after our conversation. give me a quick scouting report on your game.
My game used to be good. My game is not good. I caddied actually on the web.com tour for a buddy of mine who's been on the PGA Tour champions and web.com, and now I understand that I have no game. And it used to be relaxing and fun, and now it's just kind of work when I go out there and play golf. The goal is to get through it.
Now, when you caddied, did you wear the white jumpsuit and everything with the name tag on the back?
I was the most embarrassing caddy in the history of the game. We could do a podcast on me being a caddy. I caddied for him on the web.com up in Knoxville, and caddied for 3 rounds for him. And it was the most exhausting thing I've ever done in my life, mentally and physically, on walking off yardage, on the yardage book, on Kent. I've got to clean his ball. I've got to clean someone else's ball who maybe they got in the trap and their caddy's raking the trap. I've got to rake the trap. I've got to do the yardage. I've got to get ready for the next hole. I can't drink a Diet Coke. It was absolutely, it was a sitcom, me caddying on the tour.
I love it. Well, I hope you have a great time out there today. But let's get into hoops. So you started as a high school coach, right?
I have a very unique past. I started, I knew in eighth grade I wanted to coach, no doubt. God, watching, I mean, we would come back. That was in the days that there were no games on TV. And the only games would maybe be on a Saturday, or I don't think there were even games on a Sunday. I don't even think they played college hoops on Sunday. But the only games that were on TV were on Saturday. I remember coming back early from spring break so we could watch NC State and UCLA on a Saturday in the NCAA tournament, probably in 72, 73, 74, something like that. And I just fell in love with it. And we would go all the time to go watch East Tennessee State play in Brooks Gym in Johnson City. And I just, oh, my God, the music would go. I was just, it was my drug. It was my addiction. So in eighth grade, I knew I wanted to coach. And I was a good player. I wasn't a great player. I was a good player, but I was really good at tennis. I was better in tennis than basketball. It made me mad, made me sick. But I had to do what I had to do. And so I actually went on I turned down some Division III opportunities to play basketball, went to Middle Tennessee to play tennis. And after the year, I was like, what am I doing? I want to coach basketball. So I actually went back at age 19 and was the head JV basketball coach at University High in Johnson City, and thought that our JV games, the University High small, tiny, single A in Tennessee, I really thought those games should have been on ESPN, deserved to be on ESPN. They were the most important games when we played Yeneka JV or Cloudland JV or Hancock County. Oh my God, those games were so important. And that's where I kind of realized that level didn't mean a whole lot. It was about coaching and it was about kids. And so 4 years coaching in high school, I had a man, Alan LaForce, who was assistant at East Tennessee State then, really taking interest in me, came and watched my JV games. I remember my dad came back in town. My parents were divorced. My dad came back in town, and my dad and Coach Sefor sat right behind my bench to see if I could really coach and be a coach. And right during the middle of the game, a dog came on the came in the gym and ran around the gym floor.
You can't make that.
And I remember going, "Oh my God!" I remember going, I remember Coach Sefor going, "Well, I'm not sure your dad was really impressed." But I thought it was quite funny. And so Coach Sefor helped me to get to Wofford College a year out of college, and spent 1 year at Wofford making no money, but I was a full-time assistant, and I thought I had arrived. And the next year I went back to East Tennessee State. Alan Sefor got the head job at East Tennessee. We had a two-year run at East Tennessee that was historic. We beat Arizona in the first round of the NCAA tournament, played the 5-5 on CBS on Sunday afternoon. Pretty cool stuff. We went to a couple NCAA tournaments there. Then I saw the tough part of the business. After 6 years, they really kind of ran Coast of Force out of town, and went back to Wofford for 2 years. Had a great experience with the transition from them going D2 to D1. And then hooked in with Jeff Lebo at Tennessee Tech for 4 years. We won two OVC championships. Whipped up on your SEMO boys there, Adam. I'm just joking. They were phenomenal. Gary Garner at the time, they were phenomenal at SEMO. And then made the move from Tennessee Tech to Chattanooga and was there for 11 years, 9 as the head coach. And we had a lot of fun, a great run, and went to a couple NCAA tournaments as a head coach. And here I am talking to you today.
Okay, it's easy to tell when you talk to you that you're wired for this and you're super passionate about it. So when you went
I drink a bunch of Diet Coke.
Well, whatever the reason, you must drink them every day because you're always like this. But when you got that, when you finally got that head job at Chattanooga, did that just unleash a different side of you and you just hit the ground running? Was it I'm sure you operated with this level of passion as an assistant, but talk about when you finally got that head job there.
Yeah, I still remember the day. I remember the day I was doing. The press conference was, emotional. to work as hard as you work and to grind like how we grind and to achieve a dream and a goal was very emotional for me. And but I remember grabbing a sandwich with my brother who came down for the press conference and then doing a radio show on the way to the airport and flying, going to, I think, Houston for an AAU event on that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then back and family's there. And you're just scrambling. The difference is as an assistant, you're really scrambling trying to get players and maybe working on camp or this. As a head coach, you're scrambling working on everything. So everything touches your desk and everything comes through your desk. And you better have, and you're a young head coach. I was 37 and you try to do everything. And looking back on it, boy, it's so important to have a great staff because you have to delegate and you have to have people that kind of have the same beliefs that you got and with the same urgency or you drive yourself crazy. But you're going to drive yourself crazy, just to be honest, if you have like probably my personality, which is not a real good one. You're just wired. You're type A and that's how you're wired. So we hit the ground running and we had team camps and individual camps. And then we had a preseason tour to Ottawa the first summer. And before you know it, we're up 3 on Chris Paul in the NCAA tournament. And you're sitting there going, excuse me, is this really me? And we're walking in at halftime up 3 on CBS against Chris Paul and Wake Forest. And I'm going, dreams do come true. And they did for me, but I had a lot of people help me along the way.
And you spent 9 years as a head coach there. Looks like 4 regular season division titles, 2 NCAA tournaments. You had a great career there.
Well, it was fun. I did finish as the second winningest coach in Chattanooga history, but Chattanooga is a different place. Matt McCarthy screwed it up and he would laugh at my comment because I love Mac, but he screwed it up royally for everybody. because Mac had an unbelievable run at Chattanooga and ended with a Sweet 16 appearance. So when you go to a Sweet 16 and you're at Chattanooga, that's addicting, and you want to go back. And everything really at Chattanooga is compared to his run. And so if you don't go to Sweet 16, then you've kind of failed, just to be honest. And so it was a hard job. It's a tough job. It's in a pro city. It's a great city, but it's in a pro-type city, and it's got a huge, it's got a 12,000-seat arena on campus. And it's a tough job, but it's a great job, and one that you know, I appreciate having. But if you know, our run was, is, you know, in the Southern Conference at that time, you had a guy named Steph Curry, who was a pretty good player at Davidson. And then you had Bobby Kremitz at the College of Charleston, and they were pretty good. And Georgia Southern had unbelievable players, and Appalachian League. So it was and Elon was in the league. It was a really good league with good players, and I'm really proud of what we accomplished.
Yeah, all right. So before we continue with your career, SoCon was great this year, and because he's such a big name and just got the Virginia Tech job, let's talk Mike Young for a second, because he dominated the SoCon this year, and you worked with him at Wofford, right? You guys were both assistants at the same time there.
Mike Young and I worked together for 3 years as assistants, but also lived together for a year. And you talk about they actually did an article. They did an article that called us the odd couple, and we were the odd couple. He was I'm everywhere. I am in a scramble everywhere, and he is Mike Young. At that moment, would spend 10 to 15 minutes at the end of the day making sure that his pencils were in order on his desk and that everything was lined up and that his pens were black to blue, then to red, and he had a yellow mark and his pencils were in line. If you had a 2.5 or a number 3 pencil, he'd throw it away. It was only 2 pencils. They had to be sharpened. And he lived like that. And I would come in and just throw his pencils around. I would drive him literally crazy. And we were the odd couple, and he worked. Man, Mike Young shows up at Wofford in about a 1984 white little Granada that barely could run, and would work all day, go back to our apartment and run, stretch, take a shower, and then go back to the office and make phone calls all night. And it really kind of taught me how college basketball worked. He worked and he grinded and he worked and he grinded. And for him to have this success, and, you know, we would always talk during the Southern Conference tournament. It was hard competing against him. I didn't like that. But when, as he made that run, and he's now the head coach of Virginia Tech, to and it's really going home because he's from Radford. But for a country redneck like Mike Young to be the head coach at Virginia Tech is a lot of fun and a lot of fun to watch. But he wasn't given anything. And Wofford is a great job now because they got a beautiful place to play. And but at one time it was not fully funded. You had to make it just work to do more with less. Their arena, their Ben Johnson Arena, was not very nice. When I got there with him in like 96, 97 or 97, 98, no, I think 96, 97, we played anybody who would pay us money. So, you know, nowadays this transition from D2 to D1 is a lot easier. I mean, you can play for a conference championship. You can go to the NIT. There's some stuff online. Back then, it was like you went to jail for like 8 years. And you weren't allowed to do anything for like 8 years. And so that was a hard time. We stopped Tim Duncan's double-double streak at Wake Forest. We played Colorado. We played Clemson. We played South Carolina. We played anybody who would play us and pay us, we would play. And so it was a tough time. But Mike Young's been through the wars, and thrilled to see the success he's having now.
Was he always Because when you think Wofford or you think Mike Young, you think the motion offense that they run, and you know they do some really great stuff offensively. Was he always offensive minded, or did that come later?
Yeah, I think it probably came later. He was a defensive guy. Listen, at Wofford, you got to coach. You got to coach because you're not going to get the best players. I'm just going to tell you this. He kind of morphed into a because he was there the legend Bob Johnson at Emory and Henry. So Bob Johnson, listen, I'm not intimidated of a whole lot of people in my life. Bob Johnson was one of them that I was scared to death. I mean, he was a war veteran and coached ball and just did it the right way, but was kind of a no nonsense guy. And Mike Young learned from him, and he would still tell you today that he does a lot of stuff that Bob Johnson did at Emory and Henry back in the day. And so he has morphed into being a really, really high-level offensive basketball coach. But I'm not going to lie to you. He's a little bit like Rick Byrd. As everybody thinks he's a great coach, he is a very underrated recruiter. And when he got the right guys, they were so good defensively at times because they had mean, tough, hard-nosed Midwest guys who just wanted to guard and win. So the guys got it figured out. I don't think he's got a ton to work with at this second at Virginia Tech. It sounds like they lost a lot and a lot left. But give him time and he'll be just fine.
Was that the key for you too during your run at Chattanooga, is finding the guys that fit you and your personality? Like that's it, right? That's the most important thing.
Yeah, but it's hard to do. It's hard to do. You know, it's not hard to do at Duke and Kentucky because you can get whoever you want to. It's hard to do at, I think, the low to mid-majors. It's hard to do. You cannot take shortcuts. You can't get tricked by talent. You just got to go get the guys that fits you. The guys who stay true to that are the ones who win and sustain winning. The guys who don't, I don't know what happened at Coach Hoffman at Mercer is one of the best basketball coaches in the world, by far, not even close. He did a wonderful job at Mercer. He had all these young kids that morphed into being great players, and they developed them, and they beat Tennessee in the NIT. They beat Duke in the NCAA tournament. Well, now all of a sudden you beat Duke. Now all of a sudden you gotta sustain that. Well, you're not sustaining beating Duke at Mercer. And I don't know if they took guys that didn't fit him. I don't know what happened. But that's what happens. Is you get to a point of success, you have to stay true to who you are and what you want to recruit. And if you get away from that, then it will get you. I got away from that. And it's hard to maintain that. It's hard to maybe look the other way. You cannot look the other way. You've got, if red flags pop up in recruiting, and if you can't coach red flags type of guys, there's some guys that can. Huggins can coach red flag guys. He'll kill them. He'll fight them. Those guys are scared to death of them. But if you can't coach red flag guys, then don't recruit them. Well, what if they're really talented? It doesn't matter. You can't coach them. So coach the guys that you enjoy being around and that you enjoy coaching. And I think that's the key to success in college basketball.
And if you're an assistant, you better figure out exactly the type of guys your boss wants and needs. And get those guys.
Exactly. I mean, you know, exactly. Hey, man, what do you want at a point? What do you want at the two, at the three, at the four, at the five? What are we going to do offensively? What are we going to do defensively? I always like length. I always like good size. I liked switching ball screens. I like doing some different things. So you had to have guys who could guard multiple positions. I enjoyed that. But you better know. But also, don't bring in a crazy man. Don't bring in a crazy man if your head coach can't coach one. It doesn't work. And you think, here's the problem. And me and you have this problem, Adam, because we're good guys. We're probably the two best guys in college basketball. I voted that this morning.
I think that's accurate. Yeah, all right. I agree.
But here's our problem is we want to save the world. We think we can save every human. Well, by the time they get to being in college, it's hard to change their attitude and change their values. And you say, well, you're giving up on them. No, you just have a choice to take who you want to take in college. And so if you think you can change lives in college, I think you're mistaken. I think you've got to get guys that fit you. I think you can help impact guys, but changing guys, I think it's hard. I think their values and their attitudes are there. I think that's why it's so important for high school coaches. It's important to win, but nobody really remembers. You tell me, Adam, you're a basketball fan. Who won the national championship in college basketball in 1989? Do you have any idea?
Couldn't tell you.
How about 93?
Nope.
How about 97?
Nope.
How about 2004? How about 2007? How about 2011? You can't name them. So in high school basketball, it's the same way. Why don't you help those kids set up a great bunch of core values and a great attitude so they can be coached in college, so they understand things in college, so they're not missing eight practices in a row and they just cussed out the assistant coach and they're failing three classes. And you still let them play because you're playing your rival. Well, you may win that game, but you are doing that kid an amazing disservice because he's got no chance to survive later on. Because the college coach is going to get rid of him, and then the junior college coach is going to get rid of him, and then he's going to be back in your hometown doing absolutely nothing. You've got to do a better job, high school coaches and AAU coaches, of setting rules and values and creating core values for those kids to really, really, truly help the kids. Who was your favorite teacher at elementary school, Adam? It's the one that was hardest on you. Who do you remember the most? The teacher that let you get away with everything or the teacher that held you to a different standard? So we may not like it as kids, but we respect it. And that's what we need to do. There you go.
I love
it. My soapbox.
No, I love it. I love it. All right. So, like I said, you can tell just listening to you that you are wired for this. And after your run at Chattanooga, you decided to get out. I'm sure you had other opportunities. I'm sure you could have gotten jobs elsewhere. But talk about what went into that decision to stay in Chattanooga.
That was the round table discussion. We had a round table meeting. And I'm a little different. At this roundtable meeting was a 14-year-old or 13-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid, and probably a 6-year-old kid, all boys, and my wife. And gang, what are we going to do? We're going to have to leave Chattanooga. We got some other opportunities, and we're going to have to leave. My oldest said, Dad, I'm not going anywhere. I want to go to school at Macaulay. That's where he had been going to school. It's an all-boys private school. It's one of the highest elite schools in the country. It's unbelievable. Well, I understand that, but we have to leave. Well, Dad, I will board at Macaulay then. I'll just stay in the dorms. Well, I didn't raise you to board you, son. You're not a dog. I'm not doing that. And so is that important for you to stay at Macaulay? Yes. I want to be there. Tanner, how about you? With tears in his eyes, holding back tears, he was like, I'll do whatever you want to do, Dad. And then my youngest is a fool. And my youngest was like, Dad, let's roll. Me and you roll wherever we want to go. He didn't care. But he's six. It's hard. And you know, at the end of the day, what do you want? You know, on your deathbed, are you going to count up your championships? Are you going to count out what you did for your family? And you know, everybody's kind of like transferring, Adam. You know, it works for some guys. It doesn't work for some guys. And you cannot, I don't know, there could have been 58 right answers. And you can't judge people on what they've done. But I can only tell you what was in my heart and what I had to do. Was I chose family over chasing that dream. And I said, I remember Campbell was open and UNC Asheville was open. And I said, well, I'm gonna go after those. And my wife said, so you want to go to Buies Creek, North Carolina? to go to Campbell. And I was like, well, I've got to do it. She was like, what for? Well, I've got to go prove myself again. And she said, well, you've already proven yourself. How are you going to prove yourself? I've got to go to the NCAA tournament. Well, you've already gone twice. So if you go once at Campbell, then what? You got to go to another one and another. When's it stop? When's it end? And so that was, I got scolded by my wife there. And so we made the decision to stay. Was it hard? The hardest thing that I've ever done in my life, besides helping bury my mom and dad and sending my boy to college. But was it difficult? Oh, my God, was it difficult. But to see my family stable and happy, I mean, it meant an awful lot to me. And I thought I could do without coaching. I was good. I was working. I was working for ESPN. I did some games for ESPN3, and I was working for some business guys in Chattanooga. Well, it's strange when you're a coach. You're a coach, and I really truly believe that coaching is not a job. I think it's a calling. And I missed it and bad. And I didn't know what to do. So now I had to keep my family in Chattanooga. I turned down some college jobs, but I wanted to coach. So I ended up coaching at Macaulay at the private school that my son was going to school at. And I spent 4 years actually coaching my children and coaching at Macaulay and coaching some really good players and starting some really cool stuff at Macaulay. We won 100 games in 4 years. I had a blast. It was a lot of fun. The games are the games. The games are the same. It don't matter if you're playing Brentwood Academy and Darius Garland, or you're playing Davidson and Steph Curry, or you're playing it's the Rockets and the Warriors. Games are the games. There's some other things that were unique to high school basketball that I didn't love. As you can tell, I've got ADD of life, and sometimes I get bored, and I don't like getting bored. But, you know, staying in Chattanooga was difficult, but it was the right thing for me to do. Other families, maybe the right thing is to go off and keep chasing the dream. I think it's really hard, and I hate seeing, Adam, I hate seeing coaches leave their families, live in an apartment, and their families are away from it, and they live in an apartment by themselves. I just think that's unhealthy, and I just think that we have a very skewed opinion of what we are and who we are when we're college basketball coaches.
I love it. I love the decision. You know, obviously the decision's your own and for your family, and you do what you got to do, but I think it takes a lot of courage to do that.
It may take some stupidity. Well, I mean, I was told, you know, you just committed coaching suicide. And I went, well, maybe, but I didn't commit family suicide. So my family's happy. My oldest is at UAH playing college basketball, and I've never seen him happier. My middle child, Tanner, is going to go be a preferred walk-on at Lipscomb with Lenny Acuff. And my fool of he's now 13, and he is doing great playing baseball and basketball and really happy. So, you know, it works out. Wife's happy, life's happy, family's happy. So, you know, but it can work out multiple ways. I'm not saying that, boy, look at Shulvin, look what he did. He's the only, look at that guy. No, it didn't work like that. It just worked for us, and it was important for me because it's just like coaching, getting the right guys to fit your program. You got to do what's right for you in your heart, or it doesn't work. And only you know what's right. Other people can't tell you what's right. You just got to trust your heart and trust your brain and go with what you believe in.
Okay. You mentioned that you get bored, and I feel like, I don't know if this is the case or not, but I feel like maybe you got, after McCallie, you got bored and you created something great here with 720 Sports Group. And now you guys are doing some really innovative stuff, and I want to get into it. I want to hear about how that started. But I really want to talk about the coaching box, because that's what we have you on here to discuss and promote. And it's a unique, unbelievable opportunity for young coaches to get on-floor experience and really to get coached on how to coach. Tell us a little bit about that program, what you guys are doing with that.
All right. First of all, 720 Sports Group, I joined up with an NBA agent We are representing players and we're representing coaches. My niche is coaches. His niche, and we've got another gentleman with us and another one maybe joining us, hopefully going to join us, is they're specialists. They specialize in players. But my niche is coaches. I love coaches. It's time to kind of pay it forward. Like I told you back in the day, I had a guy who took an interest in me. If he didn't take an interest in me, who knows where I'd be. So it's time to take interest in young coaches and to take interest in JV coaches that have a dream. If I'm a JV basketball coach and have a dream that I want to be a Division I head coach, if someone doesn't take an interest in you got no prayer, just to be honest. You got no shot. Well, that's what I was. I mean, I was a JV basketball coach at one of the smallest high schools in America. And then I got to coach. I was a head coach in two NCAA tournament games against UConn and Wake Forest. Beat the University of Tennessee as a head coach. I'm at Chattanooga. So it's all about paying it forward. So in this day and age, I see so many smart young people that blow me out of the water. All right. I wasn't a smart young person. All right. And so I see all these young people that have great dreams and aspirations. I kind of ran into it at Jay Billis camp by kind of being in charge of the coaches. These kids are unbelievable. And they're kids. They're 19, 20, 21 years old. And they got the same dreams I had. The only issue is all of a sudden now, like college basketball, you can have 48 people on your staff. So you can go into college basketball. I remember I had a decision to make, and maybe it all dates back to that. Out of college, I had a decision. I could go to VCU with Sonny Smith to be the GA, or I could go to Wofford College, Division II at the time, to be kind of a full-time assistant but not making money. I mean, good God, Division I GA or Division II, lowly Division II, to be a full-time assistant. Well, I would say that 90% of America now would go to VCU to be the GA or go to VCU to be the director of basketball ops or go to VCU to be the video coordinator or go to VCU to be the assistant to the head coach. There's so many jobs now. And you know what those jobs don't they don't have in their job description? One common denominator. There's no coaching. So I had a decision to make, VCU GA or go to Wofford. Well, what do I do as a GA at VCU at this time? And they said, well, you'll film the games and you'll film practice, but you'll be a Division I guy. What do I do at Wofford? Well, you get to coach and you get to recruit. Well, the house started laughing. That wasn't a decision. I didn't get in coaching to not coach. And that's what the coaching box is all about, is you've got all these guys who are director of basketball ops, video coordinators, assistant to the head coach, GAs, managers. They all want to coach, right? That's why they got in coaching. But they're not coaching. So they networked their way to the top, and they're unbelievably smart. And they can do graphic designs, and they can, I mean, it's unbelievable how smart these young people are. But all of a sudden, then they get to a spot where it's time to coach. And then the first day, the coach has got a golf tournament or a fundraiser to go play in, and he says, hey, Adam, I need you to do an individual workout with the primer guys, and then from 5 to 6, I need you to take the post guys and do one too. And you go, okay. And you go, God almighty. I've been a video guy for the last 6 years. I've watched it, but I don't really know what the crap to do out there. And then we split up the first day of practice. Listen, man, Adam, you got jumped to the ball. You got 5 minutes, Stacy. You got jumped to the ball. And then we're going to work on switching ball screens. And then the last station work we're going to do, we're going to work on boxing out on the weak side box outs. And then one more, we're going to do we're going to break down a shake action of a ball screen on the strong side. And you look at the head coach going, what is it? Okay, yeah, absolutely, I'm ready. And you've never blown a whistle before. And then all of a sudden, I'm a big believer. Who you know gets you there, what you know keeps you there. And what you know is all of a sudden, you don't know how to coach. So here's what we want to do. And I'm teaming with you on some stuff, correct, Adam? Are we going to do some stuff this summer?
That's right, we are.
So what we want to do is I think that networking is vital. I mean, you don't move unless you connect them with the right people. All right. And I will say something about that in a second. Well, I'll say it now or I'll forget. Relationships are vital. I would never, ever, ever hire a coach that I did not know. You know, I was the head coach at Chattanooga. All these people would reach out to me and I was like, why am I going to hire this guy? I don't even know this human. Why am I going to do that? Makes no sense to me. And you say, well, how do I get to know people? Well, you go to camps, you work camps, you get to know people in a genuine way. Looking at you and exchanging a card is not getting to know people. All right. I mean, I know you have a stepson down Mississippi. Do you have a stepson down Mississippi, Adam?
I do.
Well, I know that because I take interest in you. I take interest in people. You have to be genuine for your relationships. So networking is vital. I get it. You have to do it. You got to connect. You have to know people. You have to have relationships. You have to have a relationship saying that, hey, man, Adam, if I ever become a head coach, man, you're going to be my first hire. Well, that's not done at the Final Four. That's done in a bar or at a camp or eating a sandwich or laying in a dorm room after a long, hard day at camp and talking. That's when that's done. Those are relationships. So I'm talking about that. You have to do that. You have to have relationships. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
So I sign up. I'm an ops guy. I'm a GA, whatever. Whoever I am, I sign up for the Coaching Box program, and it's going to be a 2-3-day deal. You're going to teach me how to coach. You're going to throw me in the fire on the court, give me drills to run, give me a team to teach shell defense to, do some video. Yep. You're going to be critiquing the whole way. And to your point on the relationship piece, you're going to be doing this with 100 other young men and women who are trying to do the exact same thing you are. And at the end of the day, you're going to be with those people, and you're going to leave there tripling your network because you just have gone through a camp with those guys.
We're going to put these men and women through absolute heck. All right, because we're going to coach them like daggum. We're coaching like we're coaching our team. So we're going to go through a ball screen motion on video. All right, so we're going to go through it. We're going to teach it. And then we're going to do it on the floor because I think some kids learn off video, some kids learn by watching it, and then some kids learn by doing it. And then we're going to put it in. And then they're going to teach breakdown. They're going to teach, I'm going to have a college coach teaching ball screen motion, and then they're going to have to teach ball screen motion to another group. And some kid's not going to be paying attention. Some other guy's not going to be paying attention because he's gone out the night before and he's exhausted. And you're going to have to say, hey, Tommy, when I'm talking, I need all eyes on me. Does everybody understand that? We're not out here to fool around. All eyes on me. If I don't see your eyes, that means you're not paying attention. If you ain't paying attention, you're not going to play. And how to blow a whistle, how to command, what is your voice like with a team? Are you loud enough? Are you demanding respect? Are you your body language? Are you some kid asks a question and you spend 15 minutes answering the question and you got 9 of them screwing around not doing anything? All those little things. How to blow a whistle. Listen, I'm a Fox 40 guy. You know, you got to know how to blow it. If you're coaching with a daggone little Walmart whistle with a bat.
Cheerleading whistle.
Something about, oh, my God, how to blow a whistle. Are you agreeing with me or not, Adam? Let me hear it.
I'm with you. I love it. I love it.
You got to have a loud, shrill, short whistle and say, cut the crap out, guys. Here's what we're doing. If you can't do this, you ain't going to play.
I bet you had all kinds of phrases that your players always ripped you about.
They still do to this moment. But that's the relationship part. It's got to be. You can't listen, especially these days. You can't. It ain't about being their friend. You love them, but you got to discipline. You challenge them. You coach them. That's what it's all about. And that's what we got to teach young coaches. You know, and the other thing about the coaching box, besides them being exhausted, and I, you know, I'm just going to tell you this. We're going to work on shooting right-handed and left-handed layups. We're going to work on shooting in good form so they can teach everybody. Well, I already know how to do that. Well, all of a sudden, you shoot a left-handed layup in practice or shoot a ball in practice in front of your teams and you look goofy doing it, you lose all respect. You know, Coach K had a rule at one time because I think he had a couple guys on his staff that weren't great players. He had a very simple rule on his staff. No coach is allowed to shoot a ball during practice or before practice or after practice. You're a coach. Don't shoot a ball. So little things like that to make sure that you are keeping respect with your team, how to coach, how to watch a ball screen motion. And if a kid sets a screen at an angle that is not 100% correct, you better be seeing it. You better know on the weak side on playing a little shell action that if he's not on the midpoint of the line or wherever you're teaching it, that he's not exactly, it's got to be exact because you got such game slippage. So coaching and practice is vital. And as you can tell, I'm kind of excited about it. I'm kind of excited about helping 100 young coaches. And the other thing that we do at 720 Sports Group is we represent coaches. And all of a sudden, I've got, right at this second, I got four guys who just became head coaches that are needing assistance. And one D3 and a couple D2 and one D1 or a director of basketball ops. So, like I said, it's really hard for me. Adam, if I don't know you, it's really hard for me if you call me and say, listen, I want your help. Well, I don't know you. I don't know you. We have to get to know each other before I can help you because I'm not putting my name out there on helping some guy that or some lady that I don't know. You know, I fell in love with Lauren Sumsky. Lauren Sumsky was the head coach at Rhodes. And she was a rock star. And I got to know her, and I watched her team. And now she's the head basketball coach at Lipscomb University at age 27. And no, I didn't get her the job. Helped her get the job. She got the job on her own, but goes back to relationships. I got to know her. And so the 100 people that come to the coaching box, you don't think we're going to get to know in 2.5 days? We're going to have an absolute blast with these young coaches and help these young coaches. Same thing with Billis's camp. Jay Billis and John Searby are doing a phenomenal job where they have 40 young developmental coaches come in there and learn how to be a coach. But they're also working the camp at the same time. The difference between the coaching box and the Billis, the developmental camp, is that we don't have young kids at our camp. The only people at our camp are you. And so you get no break. It'll be like going back and going to a camp back when you're a little kid. So I'm excited about it, as you can tell. And there's no doubt we can help people and no doubt that we can place people out of the coaching box.
You know, every other profession, you've got some sort of education, a curriculum, some sort of training program to go through. You want to be a lawyer, you go to law school. You want to go be a doctor, you go to medical school. There's nothing in coaching like what you guys are doing where you're getting hands-on experience on the court and someone is teaching you how to coach, critiquing you. And the biggest thing you hear when you're trying to make that jump, and there's nothing wrong, you know, with going back to your scenario, there's nothing wrong with choosing the GA spot at VCU and going that route. And just know that you're going to be in support staff roles for, you know, probably 10 years until somebody gives you that chance. And the one thing you're going to hear over and over and over again as you try to get jobs is, well, you got no coaching experience. You got no coaching experience. And this is an opportunity
It's the same thing, Adam. If you go be a GA, you don't have any coaching experience. If you go be a GA, you don't have any recruiting experience. If you don't, you know, they'll find an excuse not to hire you for some reason. You know, if you're a Division II assistant and doing everything, then, well, you don't have any Division I experience. And so that's when it comes back to those relationships. I don't – listen, my first job, I hired a Division II head coach as one of my coaches. Oh, my gosh, you hired – listen, one of my hires – how about this? One of my hires was a young man that had played for us. He was the assistant women's coach at East Tennessee State. I hired him. I mean, you can't do that, but I did. Why? Because of relationships. And so you still got to have those, but you are exactly right. There's no how to be a coach. I mean, how do you become a coach? You know, Patino had a book a long time, Born to Coach. You know, I think leaders are born. I think you can learn to be a leader, but how do you become a coach? How do you watch game after game after game after game? I went to God Almighty. I went to every clinic. I went to every coach's academy I could get my hands on. There was no internet back when I was young trying to do this. I kept note after note. That's what I wanted to do. I would watch coaches. I want to watch coaches and emulate them and how they do it in practice. And then you develop your own style. But it's a sad thing. It is who you are. It becomes who you are. And I was Coach Shulman for many years. And I just want to help. I ain't going to lie to you. You do a lot of recruiting, Adam. When I became a high school basketball coach for 4 years, I looked at it and I was like, oh, God. I mean, we didn't win 100 games because I'm a brain surgeon. Because I'm not one. There's some people out there that struggle coaching and need this and need to, you know, always ask this. You know, coaches crack me up. It doesn't matter who, what level. Hey, players, are you in the weight room? Are you working on your game? Are you playing Fortnite? What are you doing? You playing Fortnite? You working on your game? Or you just screwing around? Well, if I'm a player, I say, hey, coach, are we going to run the same crap we ran last year? Are you working on your game? Are you watching tape?
So you don't need
to
be
watching the NBA.
And just to clarify, you don't have to be a Division I support staff person, Division II. Like anyone can come to the coaching box. High school coach that wants to sharpen their tools, or you know, a current college coach that wants to improve their craft. This is open to everybody. Is that right?
We named it. We said, here's what we did: managers, GAs, Dobos, video coordinators, and all young coaches.
I love it. And what does this cost? About $1,000? $2,000?
It costs $14,000. You have to take a mortgage. All right. Here's what we did. We're going to supply. Okay, so it's $195 for the weekend. All the food's on us. Everything's on us. We will have a little coaches, a little social on Saturday night, just kind of connect a little bit. And we've got a great rate at a really nice Holiday Inn, really nice full service Holiday Inn for $89 a night. So $89 a night, get you three other people, stay in a room for $25 a night. It's an investment. I remember paying $350 to go to Bobby Knight's Coaches Academy and sitting up there and listening and learning. But God, I would have killed to gone out there and blown a whistle and got a chance to teach and coach and write down notes. We're gonna give those little cool little notebooks so they can write down notes
and have Bobby Knight rip you. You would have loved that.
Yeah, I would have loved it. I would have loved it because I would have. Listen, if you know, you got to learn. And the reason I went to Wofford is you learn by doing, not by it's by watching is one thing. I got to watch, absolutely. But let me just tell you something. Richard Johnson was a complete crazy man because he hired me as a 23-year-old to go coach at Wofford. But the first day he said, very simply, he went, All right, you're going to take the post guys. Well, I'm about 5'11 on a good day. Now I got the post guys. So I'm the post coach. Okay, what do I do? Well, I better go learn what the crap I'm doing. And so I went to Don Meyer's Coaches Academy, and I also went to Don Meyer's Post Perimeter Camp, and I watched Don Meyer and Mike Roller put on an exhibition on coaching in the post. And I learned everything I could learn. Now I had to go do it. And so I, you know, in the first year I was okay at it. So next year I'm better. But here's the great thing about coaching, Adam, is that you're never peak out. I mean, like Tony Bennett, and by the way, every time I look in the mirror, I swear to God, I see Tony Bennett looking back at me. I feel like I'm identical twins with him. I don't know if you know, because you've seen me a bunch. You agree with that or not?
I think he's probably a little bit better looking than you, but I can see some resemblance. Maybe a distant cousin.
All right. But see, I think Tony Bennett is one of the best. I promise you he's going to work this summer and try to get better. And that's the great thing. We can all get better as coaches. You get better and you can continue to get better in your work. We can all get better. And my old boss, Alan LaForce, used to take a topic in the summer, whether it be free throw shooting, whether it be under OB defense, an under OB offensive series, or whatever, and get better at that. You know, like Bob McKillop is by far top five basketball coach in America. He's always getting better. And so, yeah, I mean, this is for young coaches. But it's for any coach that wants to get better on the floor. Yeah, and you do get a Fox 40 whistle. So if you have a bad whistle, don't bring it, because we will supply you with a Fox 40. Because I'm just excited to help, because I didn't have this. If Alan LaForce didn't take me under his wing, I promise you I would be a JV basketball coach the rest of my life. And
nobody had this, because
so much fun to watch.
This hasn't existed. This is kind of a first of its kind. I love the idea. It's $195. It's August 2nd through the 4th. And it's a no-brainer. It's vastly underpriced for what you're providing these guys.
You told me how to put more money on it. That gummit, Adam. No, I just want it. It's not a... It's more of a passion thing to me than anything. We're at a great location, the Baylor School in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You're going to go on campus. You're going to say, this is a high school? No, it's a middle and high school. I mean, they got five dorms on campus. They got four basketball courts right there. They got lakes and pools and golf practice facilities. So it's pretty cool that we're going to be there, but we're going to have meeting rooms and a lot of space to do this. And we're going to get 10 college coaches or former head college coaches to come in and teach, and they won't rip your tail. I'll probably rip your tail, but those people are going to be very good and very dedicated. I want people with the same heart that I've got that really want to help. And I'm just going to tell you this. I'm going to bring down a couple coaches who are either needing coaches or have needed coaches. Because I'm going to tell you, it's the same thing for working camp. You go work camp, and all of a sudden, you connect with people, certain people. I would think that there'd be a couple people, men or women, that could sneak away and get a job out of this, too.
Go to 720sportsgroup.com. Find them on Twitter. Sign up today. It's limited to the first 100 coaches. It's a no-brainer. Coach Schulman, I know you got a tea time you got to get to. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and I love what you guys are doing, and let's talk again soon.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. As we look in the mirror and I see Tony Bennett, what I want you to understand is when you look in the mirror, you don't see a lot, Adam, because I've seen you a couple times. But I will tell you this, Adam. What you're doing for young coaches is needed, and you had the same grind I had coming up. We have heart for that. We have passion for that. So what you're doing to rising coaches is special and is needed. And you're going to grow that thing, and you're going to be like the king of the young coaches. And I love it. And me and you are going to have a lot of fun together. So I appreciate what you're doing for those young guys and girls.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it. Hit them straight today.
Adam, thanks, buddy. All right, man. I appreciate your time. Good luck to you.
Thank you.